Welcome to Betting 360, your number one source for horse racing and sports betting insights. Coming around the bend is your host, David Duffield, with another expert interview to give you the winning edge.
Hi, this is David Duffield, and welcome to another episode of Betting 360 podcast. Today I've got Mark Van Treet on the line. He manages Damien Oliver and Chad Schofield in Melbourne, and also Glenn Schofield and Brenton Abdullah up in Sydney. So his job is to get those four on the best mounts possible and get them to ride a bunch of winners. So some of the work involves booking of the rides, form analysis, and basically just handling the racing affairs of those four fellas. So let's have a chat with Mark and see how he goes about it. Thanks very much for joining us today, Mark.
Thanks, Dave. Pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, it's an all-star stable you've got there. It's Damien Oliver, Glenn and Chad Schofield, and Brenton Abdullah. What's your role in managing those guys?
Well, basically, it's just organising their rides, chasing rides for them. That's the crux of it, you know, try and get them on the fastest horses. So it's all about winners, really. So there's obviously some horses you can't get them on, but just keeping on top of things, just letting them know where, you know, certain horses are going, what races, and just, you know, keeping them in check as best I can, you know.
And so how do you go about that? You probably have a database there, because you must have to plan a little bit in advance and, you know, not necessarily even a horse's next start, but, you know, where they're headed to. How do you actually track all of that and keep on top of it?
Yeah, sure. Look, I've got a database actually very similar to what your senior form analysts use, Rick, South Coast Racing Database. And in that, I've got Vince Arcardi's times. So, yeah, I feel that you've got to have the right tools. It certainly helps you making the correct decisions. You don't get them right all the time. As to planning, it's actually, I mean, I've got two guys in Victoria and two in New South Wales. And New South Wales has actually done quite a bit different to Victoria. New South Wales, they actually work 2 to 3 weeks ahead of schedule, whereas Victoria's, for example, Noms closed today for Saturday today, whereas you do the majority of Victoria in the morning, whereas New South Wales was done this time last week for Saturday. So they actually work a fair way in advance.
It sounds a little bit like Hong Kong when I did have a chat with Tommy Berry early in the year, and, you know, he could tell 2 or 3 weeks out, obviously a lot fewer races over there, but yeah, a few weeks out, he knew exactly which horses he was going to be on. So New South Wales leans more that way, whereas Victorian's a bit more 7 days out, is it?
That's right. But I think that's probably because it's just both states are structured a bit differently, whereas, you know, Victoria is full on 7 days, where the main days in New South Wales, especially for my guys, are obviously Saturday, Wednesday and Thursday. And then, you know, and New South Wales is heavily focused on trials. I'll have a set of trials at least once a week, maybe twice a week. It's a bit different in Victoria. It's mainly, you know, you're racing 7 days. So that obviously the programs are different, which explains why New South Wales can work sort of 2 weeks in advance, whereas Victoria is basically, it's really, yeah, it's 7 days. It's a day-to-day basis it can be.
So is a key part of your role similar to, you know, a form analyst in a way, in that you're trying to find the most likely winners of a race, so you get the better rides for your jockeys, but you're doing it a fair way out from race day?
Yeah, I mean, and like you're working with your jockeys, like, you know, they might, you know, ring me after a race and say, you know, did you see such and such in race five today? You know, I wouldn't mind just find out where it's going and follow that up. And it's about, you know, trying to pick the right horse, you know, something that might have flown under the radar and you get in early, and that's how you can get some of those big rides.
And how important is it to be a good salesman? Because you're probably selling the trainer or the owner on why they should book one of your clients?
Yeah, not really. I don't think. I think it's, you know, trainers or owners generally are pretty clear who they want. Like, you can't make them or force them to put your jockey on. In most cases, a trainer, they will have probably, I would say most trainers probably have a list of, say, you know, 3 to 5 jockeys that they like to use. And then outside of that, well, you know, it might just, you know, it sort of might come down to luck. But they generally know who they want. I mean, obviously, there's certain trainers I wouldn't ring for my jockeys, you know, because you just know sometimes they just don't use them for one reason or another.
I was going to say, one reason or another, what do you think that's based on? Is it really just the relationship?
Well, it might be just, Yeah, it might be, you know, just where they ride work. They mightn't ride work at all in that particular training centre. And the biggest stables, obviously, you know, unofficially have their jockeys that they use. Like, you know, Chris Waller has a list. Obviously, Gade's got Tommy and Nash. So it can be a pretty close shop, you know, for those types of trainers.
What about diplomacy as part of your role? Do you have to make the call sometimes to a trainer and say that one of your jockeys won't be accepting a ride, and he's accepted another ride in the same race?
Yeah, it's no nice way of saying no. sometimes I can take it personally, but at the end of the day, like, you know, we're running a business and they're running a business, so, but I've got to do what's best for my jockey. Look, it's a part of racing, but yeah, it's no different for a trainer saying no to me if I'm chasing a particular ride for one of my jockeys.
Fair enough. And what is your background in the racing industry? How did you get involved managing these four guys?
I worked from a young age at Victoria Racing Club. I was there for 7 to 8 years. From there, I was Racing Services Bureau, which, you know, provides the fields and, you know, acceptances and nominations. And then I got into form analysis. I worked a little bit for Lee Friedman, and it was through my connection with Lee that he put me in contact with Damien, and it just evolved from there.
What was Lee like to work with?
Very good. Yeah, no, he's a very smart man, very astute. But yeah, it was good. It was in the good days, and he's training plenty of Group 1 winners.
I chatted with Michael Rodd last week, and he mentioned that he does a lot of his form work and the speed maps himself, but then he discusses all that with the form analyst, his father-in-law, I believe. Is that the same for the way your guys operate, where they like to do a lot of the work themselves and then compare notes with you, or do they actually want you to do the groundwork?
No, they do most of it themselves, and I actually heard that with Michael last week, and I agree with what he said. It's very important that they do it themselves because they get a good feel for the race. But there are times where they'll seek a second opinion, whether that's through me or someone else. They're generally all pretty good at doing their own form.
Another thing he suggested last week was that, in his belief anyway, track bias can be exaggerated or overrated, and also, you know, called pretty early on in a meeting when, in fact, it's, you know, the better class horses, or it might be tempo-related rather than a track bias of itself. How do you feel about that, and also how do you advise your jockeys to handle it if you think there's a bias there?
Generally, I mean, with a bias, you're not going to know until, you know, after a couple of races are run. I mean, I don't subscribe to the theory that it is overrated. Like, there obviously are occasions where there is, you know, genuine track bias. Generally, my guys are very good track walkers. Damien, he religiously walks the track before each meeting. Brenton Abdullah is the same. Chad, you know, he walks the track and along with, you know, Glenn as well. So I think, you know, you've got to be as prepared as much as possible as you can in today's racing.
You see the jockeys walking the track pre-meeting, and they're doing the diagonal course, I suppose, to see where the better going is. Yeah, what are they, the ground underfoot, but what are they actually looking for when they're walking the track? What do they do?
Well, it's probably just as there's any soft spots, especially like during winter, or, you know, winter going into spring where the tracks are drying out, like certain parts of the track might dry a bit quicker than others. And also wind comes into it as well, especially at different tracks. That's, you know, like racing into a headwind, they might want to get cover early, things like that. So they're looking at those factors as well.
All right, I'd love to get your insight on all four of the guys that you look after, if you don't mind. Firstly, sure. Glenn Schofield, he's very experienced and very successful, but whenever we do the reviews, normally about quarterly on, you know, I suppose jockey performance versus market expectation, he's always underrated. He's actually a pretty good betting proposition. How would you describe, you know, Glenn as a jockey, and also why do you think he's underrated consistently?
I'm so sure. Look, he's very good to work with. Again, he does. He's very thorough in his homework. I think Glenn is a true horseman. Like, he really understands the horse underneath him. But for me personally, I think Glenn's a great rider of stays, and he can rate them very well out in front.
Now we've got Chad, and he's the young gun, very impressive at this stage of his career, and also pretty aggressive. Yeah, what are your thoughts on Chad?
Well, Chad, yeah, he's heading in the right direction. He's obviously got a great opportunity with David Hayes. Yeah, he's obviously, you know, well documented. He's experienced quite a few suspensions. That's, you know, probably just a bit too eager, a bit too aggressive. But look, he's got a good head on his shoulders. He's heading in the right direction. There's no doubt, you know, he's a future star of the sport.
Yeah, how far do you think he can go?
Oh, I think he'll end up in Hong Kong one day, eventually. You know, I think, you know, he'll reach those heights. I mean, look, he's only 19. He's very privileged to have the position that he's in. Yeah, but he works hard. Like, you know, he rides work 6 days a week and exclusively for David. He just wants to improve. Yeah, that's... He's looking for angles just to get better and better.
Okay, what about Damien Oliver? Needs no introduction from me, but how do you find working with him?
Very driven. He's probably one of the strongest people I know mentally. He doesn't let anything get to him. You can't break him, that's for sure. He's very good, and tactically he is amazing. Like, you know, just conversations you can have with him at certain races, and it's almost he can get into other jockeys' minds. He knows where they're going. You know, he can plan a race pretty good. Before it's actually happened. So
is that how Divine Calling came about on the weekend? It seemed like he gave it every possible chance, put it that way.
Divine Calling, he actually wrote that in work 7 days prior. He was pretty quick on the phone to me Saturday morning, the morning he wrote it in work, and he actually said he'd suggested this race to Gay to run it in. And, you know, he said to me early doors, it sort of felt like a tarpy horse to him. Whether or not it gets that far, I'm not sure, but he was very bullish about it. He was very keen on it, and he was proven correct.
What about Brendan Abdullah? A lot of people think he can reach the upper echelon as well. How, you know, do you think that's realistic, and also how soon do you think that might happen?
I think definitely. Again, Brenton's pretty young. Brenton's only 22. You know, he's riding in a tough market in Sydney. He hasn't got a major stable behind him, which makes it difficult. But, you know, the opportunities Brenton gets, he makes the most of them. Brenton's a very strong rider. I mean, he models himself a bit on Nash. But, yeah, he's driven, and, you know, with the right opportunities, yeah, he can go all the way.
So you mentioned he's a strong rider. You mean physical strength? Because you compare him to Nash, and that would be a style a lot of other jockeys would like to have, in that he can, you know, almost throw him over the line at times. But is that what he's aiming for?
Yeah, he's physically strong, and that's, yeah, pretty much what he's aiming for, yeah. And I mean, if you look at his style, like, he has modelled a lot on Nash. You know, I've seen, you know, Brenton's got a pretty good record in Titan finishes. You know, he can get him over the line, so he's very, you know, strong in that area.
As far as I understand, he's also willing to listen to, you know, different people to try and get better, to improve. You mentioned that you subscribe to Vince's data and place a fair bit of importance on that. I understand Brenton's done a little bit of work with Vince as well.
Yeah, he has. Look, you know, I've mentioned certain things to Brenton regarding Vince, and he actually took a strong interest in it. And he said, you know, do you think Vince would mind if you gave him a call and just sort of had a chat about certain races every now and then when he was on the way to the races. And he's only just recently started doing that, and he feels that Vince is actually a big help to him. You know, he actually gets a better feel for the race, how races will be run. And coming down to positioning horses, like, with Vince's insight, he's actually felt he's gained that little edge. There's been cases where, you know, he thought he'd go forward on certain horses, and Vince's advised or given him, you know, some advice to say, well, you know, maybe if you just rode it a pair or two back, you'll get the ultimate out of this particular horse. And he's done that a few times, and it seems to have worked.
Okay. Do you think a good jockey can handle all types of horses, or are there some that you think are more suited to, say, leader or, you know, flighty two-year-old specific horses like that?
I think a good jockey can handle all types of horses, but certainly there are, you know, jockeys that do have that, you know, stronger in different areas, and I think that's just only natural. Like, I think I touched on it earlier, I think Glenn's a great rider on stays, and, you know, he's very good at rating horses out in front. When Brenton, you know, he's a strong rider, and he might suit horses that, you know, really respond to a strong whip rider, and that's, you know, where he comes into it.
Okay, sometimes punters read quite a bit into a jockey switch, either, you know, well-known jockey jumping on or off a horse, but, you know, there can be more to it than meets the eye. What are a few reasons why the jockey switches might occur?
Sometimes you've got to look where they're going, but the particular horse, like, you know, one horse just, that might be, it might be pretty limited, say, you know, over a sprinting trip, whereas a jockey might switch to something else where he believes that it'll take him further, deeper into the carnival, you know, the horse will get stronger over more ground. So you try and look at it's more about the bigger picture rather than the short term, you know. especially, you know, come spring, like we're in the spring carnival now, if you see a dramatic switch, a jockey switch, it just, that horse could be their cup horse, you know, taken to a Caulfield Cup or a Cox Plate, something along that, those lines.
So speaking of the spring, are any of your four locked into Cox Plate or Cups rides at this stage?
Not at this stage. Things, you know, get a bit more interesting after this weekend. Certainly, you know, they've got a couple of options there, but nothing's been locked in at this stage for the Cups.
And Ollie likes to keep his options open, doesn't he? I know with the imported horses, yeah, there's going to be some talent amongst those, so he doesn't like to have himself locked away too early.
Well, yeah, there's a couple of reasons for that. But look, we haven't got an import at this stage. If anything, it'll be a local, I would say. But again, nothing's locked in or confirmed.
Fair enough. All right, we'll leave it there for today, Mark. I really appreciate your time for coming on the show, and all the best to all four of your guys for the spring.
Thanks, mate. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to Betting 360. Get more in-depth analysis, tips, and that betting edge by heading over to championpicks.com.au, where you'll find a full transcript of this episode. If you like the show, share us with a fellow punter or drop by iTunes to leave us your thoughts. Betting 360, punting from all angles.